It's 2 o'clock, and this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated December 18th, 2015. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with Library Board OK's offer to City. The Decatur Public Library Board voted Thursday to offer terms to the City of Decatur for sale of the library building at 130 North Franklin Street. The document is the latest in more than a year of talks about the future of the library building. Last month, the city made an initial offer that included buying the building for $10. "We just took the next step that we felt obliged to take," Board President John Phillips said. "Of course, the options available to us, we need to explore and find what the best agreement we can reach with the city is. In the draft lease proposal, the library's rent would include utilities and begin at $615,000 annually. The city would be able to increase the rent by 2.5% every 5 years. The lease calls for the city to make a decision about whether to repair or demolish the dilapidated annex building within a year. It must either demolish the building within 2 years or renovate it within 3 years. Excuse me. Also included in the lease is language that is meant to keep the city, Decatur City Council, from slashing the library's property tax levy while increasing its rent. The starting point for the proposal was an agreement the library previously reached with the Decatur Public Building Commission. The deal would have kept the library's rent at a flat $615,000 a year for 20 years, also including utilities. Macon County offices would have moved into the building's unused space on its second floor and in its annex, clearing the way for residential development in the Macon County office building at 141 South Main Street. The plan stalled after the council members raised concerns earlier this year, citing $735,000 in outstanding debt from bonds that the city issued in 1998 to pay for library renovations. The library is also valued at $4.1 million asset on city financial statements, even though the library board holds the deed. City officials have said that they will seek a tenant for the unused space that is compatible with the library. Trustee Mark Sorensen offered the lone no vote on the motion. Sorensen said he thought the library should begin its negotiations with the city by offering flat rent for 20 years, the same agreement it had with the building commission. "We're making our first proposal and we're going in saying, please raise our rent every 5 years," he said. Speaking after the meeting, Phillips said that the library offered to pay more rent over time in exchange for an exception that the rent would not balloon in the 21st year of the arrangement. He said the library board had been fair in its offer. "We basically took the agreement we had as a model, didn't copy it perfectly, but didn't make additional or unusual or unacceptable kinds of demands, at least from our point of view, but ones that we felt were necessary to provide comfort that the library would continue to exist and prosper as we go forward," he said. Sorensen said the building commission proposal detailed exactly what would happen to the library building. It provided a specific timetable, and all the costs would be shared by all county taxpayers, he said. "That's not the case with the city proposal, so I have to weigh those things when I finally vote on the actual proposal." Dear Santa, Salvation Army Toy Shop fulfills Christmas wishes. Casting her eyes over a table filled with toys, Bobby Johnston couldn't hide her delight. "These are cool," she said, marveling over the trucks, rocket ships, and action figures. Johnston was among hundreds of parents who received help from the Salvation Army to provide gifts to their children this Christmas. For the second year, the Army transformed its gymnasium into a toy shop, allowing parents to choose toys that they thought their children would like. This was also Johnston's second year receiving the help, for which she said she was very grateful. With her three children, a 2-year-old girl, and boys ages 7 and 9, opened their gifts last year, she broke down in tears. "Oh my gosh, we just cried," she said. "They only got what they got from here last year, and they loved it. They loved everything they got. And every time she sees a red Salvation Army kettle, Johnston said she always gives money, even if it's only 20 cents. It's something, she said. Dave McDonough, Director of Communication and Development for the Army, said more than 3,400 children would receive the toys. In addition, the Army is set to distribute food boxes to 1,300 families on Monday. The shop was scheduled to admit 12 people every 15 minutes from Tuesday to Thursday, said Major Susan Dahlberg, estimating that there were about 15,000 toys available. Volunteers pushed carts for each family and helped them follow the guidelines as to how many items they could be chosen from each table. I want people to see that the contributions they make are going to needy families and children who will have a great Christmas because of them, Dahlberg said. Melody Scroggins, Assistant Director of the Marine Corps Reserves Toys for Tots Drive, that provides most of the toys, said the need has grown since she began helping 14 years ago. The toy drive brought in 9,000 toys, she said, praising the generosity of Decatur residents and store managers who helped secure deals to stretch the dollars as far as possible. There's been some parents that said, if it wasn't for you, my child wouldn't have had Christmas. That's what's worthwhile, she said. Volunteer Bria Acosta said that families generally seemed amazed and happily overwhelmed by the many choices available. While the true meaning of Christmas has more to do with the spirit of giving than the gifts themselves, Acosta knows that it makes parents feel good when they're able to provide even one present from a child's wish list. Receiving a longed-for item also has a powerful effect on a child. For instance, Acosta still remembers the year that a particular talking doll waited under the tree. In fact, she still has it. It just has a meaning you can't explain, she said. I think that made me feel like I was heard. Speaker Madigan misses budget meeting, Chicago. The latest Illinois budget discussion between Governor Bruce Rauner and legislative leaders touched on the state's pension crisis and school funding reform, but was missing one key player, House Speaker Michael Madigan. Madigan, Democrat of Chicago, didn't attend the latest meeting Thursday aimed at ending a budget stalemate, now in its sixth month because he had a scheduling conflict, according to his spokesman, Steve Brown. He declined to elaborate, but insisted that Madigan was committed to finding a solution to the budget gridlock. He makes every effort to attend those meetings, Brown said. It was the third budget meeting in as many weeks as lawmakers and the Republican governor try to find agreement on a spending plan. The state has been operating without one since July 1st, and both parties remain deadlocked on how to proceed. Democrats who control the legislature want a tax increase combined with spending cuts to plug a multimillion-dollar budget shortfall. Rauner wants changes in laws to make business operations cheaper and to curb union power. He also wants term limits and changes to how legislative districts are drawn every decade. Republican leaders, State Senator Christine Wodonyo of Lamont and State Representative Jim Durkin of Western Springs, described Thursday's meeting as productive but took turns in noting Madigan's absence. I thought it was a good conversation, but the fact is we're not going to move this along unless we are fully participating and actively involved in these negotiations, Durkin said. He said he didn't get an explanation of what Madigan's scheduling conflict was. We covered quite a bit in there, despite having the speaker not being at the meeting, Wodonyo said. Durkin and Wodonyo said their meeting with Rauner and Democratic State Senate President John Cullerton, Democrat of Chicago, focused on five areas: addressing the state's $11 million pension liability, school funding, term limits, redistricting, and changes to workers' compensation insurance. Rauner and Cullerton didn't comment after the meeting in Chicago. Cullerton spokeswoman Rakesha Phelan said that the senator was encouraged by the fact that there was a robust discussion on school funding reform. Brown defended Madigan's absence, saying the speaker has been fully involved in budget discussions. He said the governor was notified in advance that Madigan would not be able to attend the meeting, but Brown couldn't say when the notification occurred. Deputies deliver. Shop with the Sheriff offers a little help. Skylar Lawrence scanned the shopping cart. WWE 2K16 and Fallout 3 for Xbox. Two Nerf guns and a remote control helicopter. How much is that? Lawrence asked. Tony Anello, who was taking Lawrence shopping Thursday at Target as part of the Macon County Sheriff's Office shop with the sheriff event, totaled it up on a piece of paper. It came to $99.95. You have 5 cents left, Anello said. Yes, Lawrence said. Let's go find something that's 5 cents. That's the 12th year the Macon County Sheriff's Office has held its Shop with the Sheriff event, during which members of the department volunteer to take children in need from the Macon County towns outside Decatur and allow them to spend $100 on whatever they want. This year, 42 children were able to participate. We try to take an even amount from each of the 6 Macon County schools, said Sergeant Scott Flannery, president of the Macon County Fraternal Order of Police. We contact the school districts, DCFS, and children's advocacy centers and ask them if there's anyone who needs a little help having a good Christmas. Funds to buy the gifts are raised from the annual law enforcement trap shoot, a raffle and various other donations from the community. Lawrence was chosen after his dad, Ken Lawrence, responded to a letter he'd received. Ken suffered a double aneurysm in 2010 that left him without the use of his right side. He lives on a fixed income. Talk about a blessing, Lawrence said. It was like, thank you, Lord. Skylar had one item he wanted picked out immediately. WWE 2K16 with Stone Cold on it. But from there, he experienced plenty of inner debate. Should he buy one more high-priced item or a few lesser-priced? He chose the latter, getting 2 small pistol-style Nerf guns instead of one of the larger ones. Dual-wield, Skylar said, nodding. Like Skylar, most kids pick out toys, but Flannery said he sometimes is surprised by what they choose. A lot of them will buy stuff for their family, Flannery said. I've also seen them spend it on shoes and socks for themselves. This kid is asking me if he can buy shoes, and that kind of breaks your heart a little bit. But that's what he wanted, so we said, absolutely. South Shore School collects for Oasis Daycare Day Center. In September, 5th graders at South Shore School collected and packed gallon storage bags full of emergency supplies for the folks who come to Oasis Day Center. Director Todd Tuggle visited the school to pick up those bags and talk to the kids about Oasis and its clients, and that connection has yielded another project. On December 14th, Tuggle returned to South Shores to pick up another donation. The third grade sold Dell's popcorn and raised $150 to donate to Oasis, which Tuggle plans to use to buy gloves, scarves, and hats for people who are homeless. Since third graders typically learn about the community and we try to get them to interact with different places in the community, we thought this would be a good experience, teacher Cheryl Sturtz said. The kids and other kids throughout the building, too, made cards to give to the Oasis clients because of something Tuggle had told the fifth graders in September. Personal notes to remind those people who are homeless that someone is thinking of them and cares about them can mean more than the donations. I was surprised they would do something like that, Tuggle said. I really didn't expect it of kids that age. Tuggle said he would probably wait until after Christmas sales to buy gloves and other items when he can get more than he could now, and also because donations are more numerous before Christmas and tend to dry up after the holiday. Before Christmas, everybody gives and gives, he said, but the need is just as great after Christmas. In local briefs, man dies in crash. A 54-year-old Newman man was killed in a single vehicle crash in Moultrie County on Monday night. The Moultrie County Sheriff's Office said it was notified by Coles County Emergency Communications at 11:33 p.m. of the crash on Illinois 16 near Gays. The driver, James V. Dodge, was killed when his vehicle struck 2 large wood poles. Moultrie County Coroner Lynn Reed pronounced Dodge deceased at 12:08 a.m. Tuesday. The cause of the crash remains under investigation. Ceremony for deceased. The Mount Pulaski Courthouse State Historic Site will say goodbye to its to 2015 by remembering every member of the community who died over the past year. The names of the deceased will be read from the courthouse steps at 7 p.m. Thursday, December 31st. After each name, the bell on the historic site's lawn will toll a single time. This is the sixth year for the remembrance ceremony. After the ceremony, everyone is invited to warm up with coffee, hot chocolate, and cookies at the foundation office across the street from the courthouse. The list of about 75 names, which will be read, is posted at www.mtpulaskiil.com. Decatur Pajama Party Camp. Children ages 1 to 5 are invited to a pajama party mini camp from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. Wednesday, December 30th, and 1 to 2 p.m. for ages 3 to 5 only. The fee is $10. Register online at www.maconcountyconservation.org by Tuesday, December 29th. Winter Birding Hike. Learn to identify birds that winter in Macon County at Into the Wild Winter Birding Hike. This free, family-friendly program will be at 10 a.m. Saturday, January 2nd in Rock Springs Nature Center. Join a naturalist for a winter hike to identify the birds flitting through the trees this season. This free program is open to all ages. Participants must register online by Thursday, December 31st at www.maconcountyconservation.org. Drone Conference Expo. The Midwest Drone Conference and Expo will be Tuesday and Wednesday, January 26th and 7th at the Decatur Conference Center and Hotel, 4191 U.S. 36 West. The meeting will be held as the Federal Aviation Administration finalizes its rules for using small, unmanned aerial vehicles, or UAVs. The event is a follow-up to the Precision Aerial Ag Show, which was held at Progress City, USA in July 2014. Speakers from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. January 26th will address issues that will help farmers and those in the agriculture industry better use emerging UAV technology in their operations. The focus from 8 a.m. to noon, January 27th, will be on the use of UAV technology for facility and utility inspection, aerial photography, and emergency services. Registration is free before Saturday, the 23rd, of January, or $20 afterwards at the door. Lunch will be available January 26th for $15 per person. For more information, visit www.midwestdroneshow.com. On Biz, U-Haul, Crawford's Pizza Pub and Pins. Signs went up Thursday for a U-Haul facility as the company begins the process of remodeling the Northgate Shopping Center at 2800 North Water Street in Decatur. Plans for the space are still being worked out, but U-Haul acquired property that includes 13.9 acres of land and 205,865 square feet of building space, spokesman Jeff Lockridge said. It closed Tuesday on the property, Lockridge said. Company representatives will be meeting with city officials to discuss zoning issues and other details, he said. Our hope is that this is repurposed into a beautiful full-service U-Haul store with all the trimmings, Lockridge said. Vacant space inside the building includes what used to be a Hollywood video store, Kay's merchandise, Schnucks grocery store, and Office Depot. A national rent-to-own store currently is operating in the center. Moequa lost a bowling alley and gained a bowling alley, bar and restaurant at all the same time. The old bowling alley at 200 South Main Street is now Crawford's Pizza Pub and Pins, and is owned by married couple business partners Hillary and Matthew Crawford. They also own Crawford's Pizza and Pub restaurants in Mount Zion and Moroa, where they live. But this is their first location with a bowling alley, hence the Pins part of the new title, although the place is familiar territory for Hillary Crawford. I went to high school in Moequa, she said. It's kind of like coming home. When they found out the owners of the bowling alley wanted to sell, the Crawfords heard opportunity knocking. They said that they had checked out Moequa for locations previously, but none was suitable. The old bowling alley with an attached restaurant gave them the room they needed to remodel everything except the bowling lanes. The new restaurant, which has created more than 25 jobs, opened Tuesday and serves pizza, breadsticks, calzones, burgers, wings, sandwiches, and salads, and offers a full bar. And once some mechanical issues are out of the way, it will also serve ice cream and milkshakes. It opens at 10:30 a.m. 7 days a week and closes at 10:30 p.m., except for Friday and Saturday when it stays open until 1 a.m. Call 217-768-3255. That's 768-3255. Mowbray set to become Lee CEO, Davenport, Iowa. Lee Enterprises, the parent company of the Herald and Review, has announced a leadership change in the coming year. Kevin D. Mowbray, a 29-year-old veteran of Lee, will advance from Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer to President and Chief Executive Officer. He will replace Mary E. Junk, who will become Executive Chairman. The transition will become effective at the company's February 17th annual meeting, at which time Mowbray is expected to be nominated for election to the Board of Directors. Mary has been an outstanding CEO for 15 years. During that time, Lee has been recognized as a leader in local news and information, producer of consistent results, and an innovator in its industry. Herb Maloney, the board's lead independent director, said in a news release, "Like Mary, Kevin is an extraordinary leader with a deep understanding of our markets, customers, operations, and people. As executive chairman, Junk will serve as an advisor and mentor to the CEO and will continue to provide overall leadership for the board of directors. Her key areas of focus will include strategic direction, financial matters, and growth initiatives. As CEO, Mowbray will have direct responsibility for all aspects of Lee's operations, including more than 50 divisions in 22 states. Mowbray, 54, was elected Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer in April, having served as Vice President and Chief Operating Officer since 2013. He previously was publisher of Lee's largest newspaper, the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, since 2006. He began his career with Lee in 1986 as an advertising sales representative in his hometown of Kankakee, Illinois. Junk, 68, joined Lee in 1999 as Executive Vice President and Chief Operating Officer. She became President in 2000, Chief Executive Officer in 2001, and Chairman in January 2002. She is Chairman of the Executive Committee of Lee's Board of Directors. Lee Enterprises is a leading provider of local news and information and a major platform for advertising in its markets with 46 daily newspapers and a joint interest in four others, rapidly growing digital products, and nearly 300 specialty publications in 22 states. Another year of caroling. Midsummer Moon back with Dickens Classic. For soft-spoken Joshua Hammond, playing the part of miserly Ebenezer Scrooge can be enjoyable. "I get all my meanness out in one year," he said, "but I've tried to make it my own." Hammond is among cast members in Midsummer Moon Productions' A Christmas Carol at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. Saturday, December 19th, and 2 p.m. Sunday, December 20th, in the Decatur Civic Center. Tickets are $8 for adults and $6 for children. The production company has been producing the famous Charles Dickens play for 4 years using local singers and actors. Each year, the dialogue becomes a little more smooth or changes slightly. "We like it because it's our own show," said Maria Leitner, Midsummer Moon Production co-founder. Although they have added music and carols most will find familiar, they have stayed as close to the original play as possible. The company has added an orphan scene to the show to utilize the cast of children. "Half the cast are adults and teens, the other half are kids," Hammond said. The production company has added new actors, but the audience will see a few familiar faces as well. Scrooge has been played by Hammond since they first performed the play. It gets easier for the lines to come out, he said. Now I try to add an attitude. At 33 years old, Hammond plays the part of an older British man. The character's dialect can be tricky. He's a businessman, not Cockney, Hammond said. But you just do the lines the best you can. Many of the children have returned to the stage along with their family members. One child started as an orphan, then played Tiny Tim, and is now Peter, the oldest Cratchit son, Leitner said. Dickens' story has been adapted on stage throughout the years in various styles. For this reason, Hammond knows he can alter his character a little. I've tried to make it my own, he said, and become more of my own person as Scrooge. Now, if you go, it's A Christmas Carol at 2 and 7 p.m. Saturday, December 19th, and at 2 p.m. on Sunday, December 20th. It's at the Decatur Civic Center. Tickets are $8 for adults, $6 for children 12 and under. Visit Decatur Civic Center box office or call 217-422-6161. That's 422-6161. Tim Kaine's column, Christmas Music is Comfort. Of course, holiday music gets played too much, and it has a week to go into super overdrive. Complaining about the music and the song's early arrival is as much of a tradition as is complaining about the early arrival of the retail season. We hear about Rudolph and sleigh rides and jingle bells so much that if we hear them one more time, we're liable to burst. Does it ever occur to those complaining to turn the music off, to find another way to stay entertained during the season? Do these gripers ever think about why Christmas songs, religious and secular, are so omnipresent? Why are there fast food outlets on so many corners lining our highways? Convenience, certainly, but comfort as well. When some people travel, they want to find locally owned restaurants and patronize a small business. But there are more who want to get on their way, and in an unfamiliar place, there's a comfort of knowing exactly what you'll get at a chain restaurant. May not be the greatest, but at least we have an idea what will arrive and when. There's a similar comfort in the familiarity of music. That explains to some degree the ongoing success of oldie stations and classic rock. And for 4 or 5 weeks out of the year, many of us are content to return to the familiar in entertainment. Last week on the front page of this section, we ran a guide to televised holiday specials listing channels and times. Close to a dozen of the selections are in excess of three decades old. True baby boomer comfort viewing. Their ongoing popularity shows not only how attached boomers can get to their classics, but also the quality of those classics. The younger generations don't continue to watch into their adulthoods just because they were force-fed by their parents. For boomers and even those a shade younger, their Christmas youth was a three-network-only world, a world where radio stations were locked down on the station that played the most palatable holiday music. For many of us, hearing those first secular tunes, Jingle Bell Rock, Blue Christmas, and Rockin' Around the Christmas Tree for some, Little Saint Nick and the rocking version of Santa Claus is Coming to Town, were surprising early signs that our parents were going to share the holiday space via words and music. Is there any wonder that some might want to return to a time when color television was something we'd never seen, and when Christmas cards were and decorating were the tree were family projects? Isn't it a wonder how we'd have done almost anything to get out of it at that time, and now would give up so much for an opportunity to do it all again, however long Mom wanted us to work? And even if you're feeling curmudgeonly, it's easy to avoid. We've never had more entertainment options. You don't have to opt for a Christmas Pandora station. You can switch stations and even reject every vaguely holiday-ish tunes that come into your orbit. There are certainly ways to avoid the onslaught of holiday programming. There are channels that offer the other than ABC Family. If you're overwhelmed in public, being peppered nonstop with holiday music cheer, you've got to keep your head down, move fast, and hum a Led Zeppelin song in your head. Fun, face facts. You're likely outnumbered. There are happy people all around you enjoying their comfort and their trips down memory lane. Allowing it can be your contribution to the world's Christmas spirit. We'll take a short break now and continue with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated December 18th, 2015. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.